Welcome to Quiet House. My name is Richard Harper, and this is a beer podcast. But not just any beer podcast, Quiet House is dedicated to the fascinating world of mixed culture fermented beer. Here we focus mainly on the UK, but we may venture further afield to places that have inspired or been inspired by the UK. Quiet House will feature interviews and discussions with beer producers, roundtables and tastings, chats with retailers who sell mixed firm beer, and pretty much anyone else who enjoys it. We'll be covering things like flavour profiles and what to expect from these beers, delving deep into the brewing and fermentation processes, including all about the yeast and bacteria that makes this kind of beer so fascinating. For many, the idea of a mixed firm brewery might be a farm with quaint barns, or beer fermented in barrels with bottles featuring delicate artwork from pieces of nature. This will be correct for some producers, but there are ones that don't quite fit that image, particularly when it comes to bottle artwork. In this second part of two chats I recorded from a very busy London Craft Beer Festival in August, it features a brewery with a really interesting story of how they came to be, where they went fire, and what drives them forwards today. Welcome, Johnny, from Holy Goat Brewing of Dundee, Scotland.
I am the co-founder, head brewer of Holy Goat Brewing, based in Dundee, Scotland. I got started, I was doing a postgrad degree at Edinburgh University in archaeology, of all things. And then during that, I was getting into craft beer at the time, going to there's some really good places, Hanging About was one of the first bars in Edinburgh. And Edinburgh University at one point had a beer society, but okay. When I started there, it didn't. It had everyone had graduated, no one had carried it on.
Yeah.
So myself and my flatmate at the time decided we would start it again. And as part of that, we would start homebrewing as part of it. And it's one of these things where it's like very popular at the fairs, the university fairs, because everyone's like, oh, beer society, yeah. It's like £1 to sign up or something like that.
Yeah.
And then it's like, great, now we've got a good pot of money. We can buy homebrewing equipment for the beer society and we'll use it for that. But we'll also, it's going to be at our flat, so we can homebrew as much as we like.
Amazing.
But it was good. We were both doing PhDs, both very analytical, very looking at what beers people are making, trying to understand all the different styles of beer and how to brew them, trying to understand off flavours. So we both came into it with effectively, I think we challenged each other quite a lot, because he would brew these beers and I'd be like, oh, well, I need to outdo him. It was just we're constantly pushing each other. And it was a really fun time. We made some very weird stuff and we drank a lot of beer that was getting into the UK at the time. It was back when Stone was just getting into the UK. It was lots of interesting stuff going on, just happening in the beer industry. But towards the end of the PhD, I started getting more and more into the brewing and lost a little bit of interest in the PhD. It's one of these things where with funded studies, PhDs, you don't often get to choose, at least in archaeology, you don't get to choose particularly exactly what you're doing.
Okay.
And so I was interested in a very specific period, and I was interested in, as you might imagine, I was interested in drinking and drinking vessels and of a particular period, the British prehistory. And there was very interesting stuff happening, but finding funding to do a PhD in that was not going to happen. I ended up getting it for something related to the period, but not to that at all. So
drifted away.
Yeah, I drifted. I ended up, the PhD gave me the time to actually produce a good article on what I was actually interested in.
Oh, wow.
But I sort of lost the love for what I was actually supposed to be doing. And then because of all the homebrewing, Hanging Back, where I used to be pretty regular, they didn't have a brewer at the time. They've got a small 50-litre pilot kit in the back, and they didn't have a brewer, so I just dropped in a mixed pack of my homebrews. And general manager at the time was like, cool, yeah, just start brewing here, that's fine. So then it was effectively from homebrewing to homebrewing slightly larger batches.
Yeah.
But all your ingredients are paid for.
Yeah.
And you could just do what you want. And it was, I was paid general shift wage for bar shift wage, but for brewing. So I was getting a lot out of it. I enjoyed it.
Cool.
And got to work in a cool bar and try all the beers all the time.
Nice.
So I had a good time and learned a lot. Did a few hundred brews.
Oh, wow.
Each time I was trying to test out different ingredients, different processes. It was definitely formative. It was around a similar time to where, like, new yeast cultures were coming out. Well, a lot of new yeast cultures were coming out all the time, but specifically Kveik yeast was coming out Norway and surrounding countries. So I got to experiment with a lot of that. I would be like buying yeast vials off some random dude on the internet and then brewing beer. And if it worked, people at the pub were drinking it.
Nice.
It was good, yeah. Got to start experimenting with more mixed fermentation stuff.
Okay. Were you able to do anything at the Hanging Bat?
Yeah, most of the stuff I was doing there was mixed fermentation. Yeah, it got to the point where it's quite difficult to do mixed fermentation and clean fermentation without having issues of cross-contaminant, especially when you're not a commercial brewer who has all the processes and...
Oh, I haven't got a lab anything grow?
Most things were mixed fermentation there, whether I liked it or not.
Yeah.
But it was really good for like understanding ingredients. I was also at the same time, I had a part-time job working at a brewing shop called The Brew Store in Edinburgh, which closed down maybe a year ago. But that was also really great because I was just living and breathing brewing occasionally doing my PhD.
Yeah, I'm going to say, I can see how it drifted.
Yeah. And then when I was at the Hanging Bat for a while, it was very clear to me that my future was going to have to be in the beer industry.
Yeah.
Like, that's my passion. And then I started a brewery with someone called Vault City based on cultures that I had worked with a fair bit at the Hanging Bat. I'd find like a good blend that you could produce fairly good turnaround times for a sour beer that wasn't like a kettle sour. Kettle souring was always, to me, like, I didn't like the process. I often found them have off flavors.
Yeah.
The best version you get are just very clean but pretty nondescript.
Yeah.
And I was like, there must be a better way of doing this. And one of the farmhouse cultures similar to Kveik but not actually classified as Kveik, it's from Lithuania, but one of those I received from one of the random dudes on the internet in the post had live strains of bacteria and also the yeast in it, and was super flavoursome, like really good, really lemony, citric, sort of juicy. And that is what went on to become the Vault City house culture, house strain, and the brewing techniques that I sort of like implemented there became how it's done and how it's continued, I believe, to be done. I don't know anymore.
Yeah.
Because I went on to leave Vault City and, started Holy Goat. So brings us to not quite where we are yet, but the beginnings of that.
Yeah. Wowzers, that's interesting. I'm saying it was one of the things, what it was about the non-typical brewer's yeast, about the different bacteria that piqued your interest. The fact that you were able to do those at the Hanging Bat as well, obviously is really in that kind of setting. Was it something that just normal beers were like, yeah, they're great, I drink them, but do you think that comes from your kind of educational thing, looking into stuff, looking like what extra things there are and going diving deeper into something?
There must be more to this. Definitely there's some aspect of it where I'm like, what else is going on? Is there stuff people haven't done before? And like, what can be found? Like, what is some of it's like investigative, like journalism in a way, and like you look into the sources, like you look into what people are saying on various things and like experimenting with different things. You're like, are there flavors that we're not looking at that can be produced by certain yeast and bacteria and certain things? And then it's just a case of experimentation, figuring stuff out along the way. But it's really enjoying, it's really exciting. It's the most enjoyable thing for me in brewing. It's like tasting a beer with a new culture and then being like, I've never tried a flavor like this before.
Yeah,
that for me is like hands down what I'm in this for.
So do you have a particular strains you tend to use, or is you have certain ones you use, but you're experimenting all the time, still finding, like you're saying, wanting to find new things and new flavours?
Experimenting all the time. I mean, in terms of the way we brew at Holy Goat, the process is pretty much using Brett to do the primary fermentation.
Okay, yeah.
But there is also, in conjunction with that, a mixed culture that's doing some other things.
Yeah.
But there are large elements that is what we'd call 100% Brett fermentation.
Yeah.
But it's probably more like 90% Brett fermentation.
Yeah.
So, but with that, you get like Brett fermentation is so different to Saccharomyces fermentation. It takes way longer and you get weird flavors along the way. It depends which Brett you use, but you get a lot of different results. But often the results are like way more intense fruit or like yeast expression, and it's often in form of fruit. So, like, we get shitloads of pineapple, tropical fruits, apricot, peach.
Wow.
And on another Brett strain blend that we use, it's like more like citrus forward, but always very juicy and like, so working as well with mash temperatures
Yep.
A lot of traditional use of retonomyces fermentation assumes that the Brett will just eat everything. And then when you start fermenting with 100% Brett, it's actually a different ball game completely. And so a lot of that was just like finding it out as you go along.
Yeah.
And
were you expecting, because knowing that Brett, like saying secondary and things, tends to want to eat everything until it, you think it stopped and it keeps going.
Yeah.
And the 100%, whether it was quite a surprise, going, oh, it's stopped. It's like, it's almost acting like a normal brewer's yeast. Yeah. I'm done
this
now.
This is what I want to happen. Why is this happening? It's one of those things that I'd read some stuff about it. It acts differently when you add it as a primary yeast rather than a secondary yeast. And I wanted to explore that more. So that was very much like, well, this will be interesting. If this works, then it could be amazing.
Yeah.
And I was looking into other ways of doing this as well. So I was looking into like certain compounds that could halt Brettanomyces fermentation without trying to kill it and be too intrusive like that.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
And this method just seemed to work, and it's been consistent. And, you know, when I think about packaging, like you talk to someone who works with Brettanomyces, you say, we'll package that beer at 1.015 finishing gravity. And they're like, what the hell? That's just going to explode. And it's like, same. I thought that it might. But we've been packaging that sort of beer for over 2 years now, and we've had very little issues.
Yeah.
So
Brett does get tired. Brett does get
If you use it in specific ways. Very specific ways.
Yeah.
So like there is something to that.
Yeah.
The process, temperatures and etc.
Yeah.
But we've not had many issues with overcarbonation. So thankfully to this day, touch wood.
Yeah.
May it remain.
So I mean, doing that, obviously, could you did the types of beers you're doing from the hanging back? Was there a particular confidence or something that you went, oh, actually, these will work as on a commercial thing? But obviously, say going through the Vault City part of your journey, but I guess that's a similar thing as well. What made you think that it could be done commercially and actually made as a business?
So I remember when I was at the hanging back, you'd have beers like Duggar's Tropic Thunder. It was like one of the most popular beers that would come in, and it would only get a keg for like a special event, and it would be flying out. And I'd be like, I could make this beer. So I started making this beer, and then when I made it, it would fly out, and I was like, well, I can make this beer commercially at my own brewery. And then I did, and it flew out. And it's been very much, there is a lot of love for that sort of style of big fruited sours.
And
for me, it stems from a love of like Belgian style sours. You know, you'd have like Cantillons, Dreyfontaines, and it was like cherry beers that were like 200 grams a litre, 400 grams a litre. And you were like, if Belgian lambic producers, like serious old school beer producers from Belgium, can do heavy fruiting like this, why can't anyone do this? So started doing it, but then doing it with lots of different fruit. And you're starting to see that, I guess, more and more now with Belgian producers coming back and trying out different fruit and
doing a lot more different stuff. The thing as well, I suppose, it's that you kind of, you see what people have done, and you need to experiment because you think, well, they do those, so we're only going to do those what people want. Do you think it comes from the big craft beer movement of just like, oh, we're going to do this, and obviously the classic American thing of bigger, bolder, better, and just doing stuff that they've done using that and that and that, it's worth trying. And actually, when you've had something, like saying, if you've had that beer and it's really good and people really liked it, and you go, oh, I can do that and try something else. You want to experiment and do more.
Like a big thing for me was visiting Belgium and trying the beers there. I go back now, and every time I go there, I'm inspired, because it's not just like lambic producers. It's like everyone producing beer, like a lot of the producers in Belgium are doing like weird and wacky stuff that is just like so different, so nuanced. A lot of it's like beautiful and stunning beers. And they're just like, only in Belgium would I have a beer like this. And it's just,
it's that classic thing with the Belgians, the way that people do things. The Belgians don't shout very much about stuff.
They're often keeping their cards quite close to their chest. It's like, oh, what do you do here? And they're like, ah, they're tapping the side of their nose. Like, maybe one day you'll figure it out.
I suppose they want to keep that mystery going.
It's, for them, it's a very old, you know, for all of us it is. But like for them, doing more niche stuff is, they've done it for a very long time, and they've got their tricks of the trade and little trade secrets.
You've seen the kind of appeal people drinking it. Do you think there's a mass appeal that are more of like coming here and people enjoying the beers? You think there is, you know, it gets wider and wider. Do you think it can get more?
I think so.
Depending on the beer, because Mixed Firm is quite broad.
It's definitely still a niche, and it's been like a lot of growth. And then now it's sort of like seemingly reached a plateau in sales, at least in the US, from what we've been looking at.
Yeah.
So like you're starting to see US big mixed firm projects in the US, and to be fair, in the EU, be like, actually this has got to a certain level. Or like Michaela Baghaven is one example.
Yeah.
Huge amount of money put into it, and they did amazing beers, and they basically said, this is not making any money for us, so we're not doing it anymore.
Yeah.
And then you got like BrewDog Overworks thinking, this is going to be huge. Yeah. It's going to take over the world. And they've been like, no, that was not worthwhile.
Well, they didn't really know what they were doing with it. But yeah, the Mikella one really surprised me, I think. But yeah, yeah, the BrewDog kind of didn't surprise me.
Yeah.
That they went that way, but...
yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm hoping, like saying, from doing this, wanting to do the podcast, that more people are interested in these kind of things. I say it is quite broad, and not all mixed firm beers will be as popular as each one of them.
No.
But the fact that the kind of, even if it's the fruit sour stuff and it's done, like the way you're doing it, like 100% Brett and fruit and stuff, that it's so fascinating that people won't even realise what they're drinking and the kind of what goes into it. A couple of things to finish on. The artwork, your beers, knowing having your interest in your music and things like that.
Yeah.
Do you think the artwork was always going to be kind of that, or is it just like you found someone that did that artwork, had seen it and thought it would work?
It was when, towards the end of Alt City, when I was like, okay, what's the next thing? Like, what is the dream brewery? I sort of needed to have that previous brewery experience to be like, okay, now I actually know what I want.
Yeah.
And found a like-minded person to start the brewery with. And then it was a case of like, need to have this sort of like music influence in terms of art style, and just the music influence in general, because it's just part of who we are.
Yeah.
And got in contact with an artist who I'm a big fan of, and they were up for it, you know. And it totally fits the brand. And I've always loved that sort of mixing of, you know, elements of beer that are art, and there's art as well. And you're putting the two together, you're giving someone something tangible they can hold and look at and say, that looks awesome, it sounds awesome, I want to drink that, hopefully it tastes awesome too.
Yeah.
So it's like everything is there. Yeah. You know? Yeah,
it's certainly eye-catching. I mean, it's always, and the good thing when you got that one person doing it, they can be very different images, but that style is very much,
yeah,
you can see your beers and those labels and t-shirt designs and things that are very much yours. So yeah. Right. Well, I think a really good one to finish on is, we talked about, we started like homebrewing and being able to do it at uni. If someone wants to try doing it, do you think, I mean, with more options now, you know, than there was even 5 years ago, whatever, the cultures and mixed cultures that you can get, do you think there's a good way for someone who wants to start off doing it as an initial thing and an understanding the way someone could go about doing
it? Yeah, I mean, just start like trying to get stuck into homebrewing from all grain. And like, I use the simplest system, which is just a bag full of grain, steep in water. You just need one pot, and then you boil it, and then you don't need the fancy equipment. You need to basically just have a fermenter, and you need to have the cultures, and you try and keep that temperature for the fermentation at a reasonable level for what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
But you don't need to have expensive equipment to do it. You could do it with homebrew buckets if it's the right time of year, with no temperature.
Yeah. Say at the moment we've had like, seems like 20 degrees for the last 2 months.
Yeah. But like a lot of the cultures you can get now, especially like Kvike cultures, they like it hot, but they don't care if it's a little bit lower, as long as it doesn't get too cold. So they're very forgiving. If you want to do Brett fermentation, Brett likes it warm. It's like summer months, just fire it in there. Yeah. Don't worry too much. Brett will do weird things at different temperatures. I've done Brett fermentations at like 30 plus degrees Celsius, and it's produced some crazy, like, good results.
Yeah.
So what I like to do is just like see how the season changes things, and you know, in the summer months we'll often turn off all the heating for tanks and just let the temperature naturally, I mean, we're in Scotland so it's never getting that hot, but and then in the winter, or like in the in-between period, we'll turn on the heating, and sometimes it will be getting really hot, and then it's just like, okay, let's see what happens.
So lots of experiments.
Oftentimes it's like, this is cool, I want to do this again.
Yeah.
Very rarely it's like, we have an issue.
So experimenting is that thing, and I guess it's understanding that of time as well.
Yeah.
It's something, knowing that some things could take a while and taste a bit weird.
And be ready to throw beer away.
Yeah.
I mean, more so as a commercial brewery, you can't afford to release bad beer.
No.
But once you've experimented enough, you get to a point where you have a general, reasonable enough understanding of what's a risk and what isn't a risk, and most of the things you'll produce will be risk-free.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Give it a go kind of thing, which is always the thing.
Yeah.
Just try something.
There'll be a lot of rubbish, but eventually it will be good.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, thank you very much for talking to me. Yeah.
Thanks
really good. Glad
me.
To able to do it face to face with, one day I'll make it up up further north, come to see you. But yeah, it's nice to actually do this. Good to be able to grab you while you're down here to have a chat. And good luck with more of the beers, because they're tasting great at the moment. So yeah.
Thanks very much.
Be enjoying more of those as we go along, and have fun this evening.
Cheers.
More of the same. Yeah. Lovely to speak to you.
Yeah,
thanks very much.
Lovely to speak to you. Cheers.
Big thank you again to Johnny from Holy Goat for taking time to speak to me, and be sure to take a look at their current beers available via the website and shop at holygoat.beer or Holy Goat Brewing on Instagram. And if you haven't already, please follow us on Instagram at Quiet House Podcast for details of future episodes. Cheers.
Daddy loves beer.